The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
It's that time of the week when we tell you what to watch on the big screen and small. And we are joined in studio by John Fardy, presenter of Screen Time and entertainment journalist Serena Bellissimo. You're very welcome, guys.
Hey.
Good evening.
Serena, let's go to you first. What's your first pick?
Okay, so this is a mixture of screen and small screen. This is Elle, the prequel to Legally Blonde, a TV series. So if you wanted to know what Elle Woods was like in high school, this is it. This is all that it's about.
I wonder how many people have ever thought that. Oh, I wonder what Elle Woods was like in high school.
Well, exactly. My 15-year-old saw me watching this and she's like, I want to watch it, but Mum, was there really a need for a prequel? Probably not. Having said that, did I really enjoy it? Yep. Did it feel more Clueless? Do you remember the movie Clueless that got turned into a TV series?
Alicia Silverstone. Yes, yep. I do.
And then it turned into a TV series. That's what it felt like. It has nailed the 90s perfectly. Lexi Mindtree, Lexi Mindtree, who plays Elle, is brilliant.
She really looks like Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah,
and Reese Witherspoon donated her wardrobe from Legally Blonde to her.
Wow.
Look at you, researching, eh?
Well, I just saw a clip of her on Jimmy Fallon, to be honest. It was accidental research.
But, that's a hard thing to live up to try and be. And, it's not just any character, it's an iconic character. She does it so well. Sometimes you're looking at it going, is that Reese Witherspoon? Another time you're like, no, it's Lexi.
Is this a feel-good watch? Is that what this is? A Gilmore Girly kind of a thing?
Exactly. Look, it's definitely for the teens. I've always loved a good teen series. So if you love a good teen series, this one's for you. The 90s, the way the 90s hits in this as well, that, you know, because it's set in, she's in LA and has moved to Seattle. So a sea of pink moving to a sea of grunge where she doesn't necessarily fit in.
So she's a fish out of water.
No, she doesn't. What was the line from the first one? Whoever said orange is the new pink is seriously deluded. Isn't that the line?
And that is the title of one of the episodes in this. Also, James Vanderbeek. This is one of his final ever roles. He is in
Dawson this. Dawson from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, so he filmed this before he passed and he's in this as, they call it a mayoral candidate. So he's in about 3 or 4 episodes. Look, if you want a high school drama set in the 90s, this is it. Prime Video.
Inoffensive and kind of nice to watch.
Completely. And I had a friend of mine text me.
There's no Jennifer Coolidge or anything like that?
No, this is pre-them. And I think that'd be a really hard character to do, a younger Jennifer Coolidge. But I had my friend text me going, can my 13-year-old daughter watch this? Yeah,
you can. You thought more Clueless than Legally Blonde?
Yeah, it felt more Clueless than Legally Blonde. And I think it's because it's that whole high school thing. It's set in the 90s as well.
I do like a bit of a nostalgia buzz.
Yeah. But do you know what? Because the 90s are all the rage at the moment, it actually feels quite current at the same time.
I have
for the
clothes
technology
now that are identical to things I had 30
raging
years
you
ago.
Through the,
I had a quick look at the soundtrack. A mix of 80s and 90s. Brilliant stuff.
It's really,
Pretty in Pink is in there.
Well, so this
which
is,
has got to be a nod to Pretty in Pink.
Exactly. And see, this is the thing. So you've got, because it's Seattle, there's a lot of Nirvana, a lot of grunge. But because it's Elle Woods, you've got the Pretty in
Pink
stuff.
It's quite a clever
place
to set it because of her being so, you know, ditzy pretty, all of that.
Yeah.
And that backdrop is the perfect,
it's well done,
you know, antidote.
And it ends in a cliffhanger. So I'm assuming they're hoping that this does really well and will be available for a season 2.
Good
Prime
stuff.
Video.
I might give it a watch, actually. John Fardy, what is your first choice?
So this is crazy, but crazy good. This movie is out in cinemas tomorrow, the 3rd of July. It is called, and I'm kind of building up to this because I'm getting it wrong. I keep saying it wrong, but it is called, it's an unwieldy title, Nirvana, the Band, the Show, the Movie, right?
Wow.
And it has nothing to do with the band
Nothing
Nirvana.
To do with Nirvana at all.
At all. Like, it might be a tiny little reference. Not quite.
There is a bit of 80s cultural reference, but we'll get to that in a moment.
No, exactly. So Matt Johnson and Jay McCarroll are two people you may have never heard of. They're kind of comedians and filmmakers who had a web series, then a TV show about this fictional band called Nirvana the Band, which was terrible. And they were desperately trying to get gigs and never got them. And that was the kind of cult TV show in Toronto about 10 years ago. And they've now turned it into a movie where they are desperately trying to get a gig in a place called the Rivolo in Toronto. And they are a really bad band. And they don't even think, how are we going to get this gig? Why don't we call them up? They come up with these bizarre ways to do it. Like, they're going to skydive off the CN Tower and announce their gig in the Sky
Dome. I won't
dome.
Reveal what happened, but I read I read what happened when they do this. And I actually laughed out loud just reading it, never mind actually seeing it.
This movie, I'm not sure I'm describing this well because it's very hard. It's off its head. It is like Jackass meets Back to the Future meets a Wes Anderson movie.
Because they do time travel.
This is the weird
thing. So it's not a mockumentary in that case.
It's not. But at times, the filming of it was almost like they were guerrilla filmmaking. There are people clearly not knowing this was a fictionalized movie that they're talking to. But it's hilarious. It's about two men who really should know better and trying to fulfill this wish of theirs to become rock stars. But it's so much more. Like, maybe it's me, because we and Serena and stuff watch a lot of movies and stuff, but I haven't seen anything like this in a very long time. And I just had a big cheesy smile.
Is there a
the
reason why they're called Nirvana? Is it like, are they a tribute band?
No. And the songs are terrible. One of them can play the piano pretty well, but the music doesn't even make any sense. And in a way, maybe it's a study of you need to grow up and leave behind your dreams, but that's doing it a disservice. There's much more to it than that. And there's this Back to the Future trope in it. And I don't want to give a spoiler, but let's just say they might meet themselves 17 years earlier, and it's absolutely hilarious. This is a joy from start to finish. It's Spinal Tap-ish. It might be Spinal Tap for this millennium or this century. It's absolutely delightful. Go and see it in the cinema.
Great.
Okay, cool. I will, actually. That sounds great. Serena, what do you got?
I've got another one for the cinema. This is for the kids, if you're looking for something to do with them. It's Minions and Monsters. And I have to say, when I saw this and I saw all the trailers, I was like, how much more can we do with the Minions?
Yeah.
Let's let them rest. After this, I say, let's keep bringing them out.
Really? Is that good?
Yeah. I mean, it's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's mad. But my kid turned to me at the end of it going, Mum, how loud were you laughing? I could hear your laugh, because it's just so stupid. It's basically set in 1920s Hollywood, and the Minions have to make a movie.
Of course it is.
Why wouldn't it be? And the Minions have to make a movie. But in order to make a movie, they're trying to summon all these old style creatures. So it's a movie about making a movie, about making a
movie.
I don't
even know what an old style creature is. What is an old style?
Sorry, old style monster type creatures from that 1920s type horror type.
Oh, kind of the
genre.
Thing from the lagoon or whatever.
Yeah, like ridiculous.
Okay.
And it's just
mad. There's no Gru, there's none of that stuff.
Stick around for the... I don't want to give anything away.
Okay, no, I'm asking the wrong questions. Or maybe the right questions.
Stick around for the credits. Actually,
and we are in summer holidays, when on rainy days people need somewhere to bring their children.
Yes.
How many Minions movies has there been at this stage?
Good question.
I think this could be 7.
Is it 7?
Really?
I'm nearly sure it's
bloody
7.
Hell.
Yeah. Now, someone's going to text and say I'm wrong, but it's in that ballpark.
I'm being informed by our moderator. It is 7.
Oh,
well,
there
done.
You go.
JF, what's your next
choice? Enola Holmes 3 on Netflix, a new movie. You may know Enola Holmes. It's based on this young adult series of novels. She, Enola, played by Millie Bobby Brown, is sister to Sherlock. And it was an attempt, I suppose, on one level to maybe feminize the character. But they did something wonderful in the first and second movie, where she went on this kind of rip-roaring Jolly Hollysticks adventure with a kind of modern twist. Millie Bobby Brown is very good in it. We're back for 3. She's due to get married to Louis Partridge. That doesn't quite happen. That's not a spoiler, because something happens with her brother Sherlock and the very evil Moriarty. There's a Dr. Watson in it. This is kind of Jolly Hockey Sticks for a modern age. I like these movies.
I like
Do you know what
ones.
I mean by Jolly Hockey Sticks?
Yeah,
don't you?
Yeah,
like all very English. And
But
it's kind of a romp, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's modern. And there are some things in this one about, a lot of it takes place in Malta, and there's kind of a motif about English colonialism and stuff that, you know, they treat quite cleverly, I thought, as well. But as a movie that you might watch with, say, young teens, maybe 9, 10-year-olds, it's good fun. I mean, they might be slightly running out of steam, and I felt a tiny bit they were repeating this a bit from the first and second one, but it's still pretty entertaining. And Millie Bobby Brown, you know, people have varying views on her. She was in a movie last year called The Electric State, which was terrible, but she was great in Stranger Things. Mm. She's really good in this. So kind of 3 stars, I would say. Plus, I'm talking to the cast on this week's Screen Time. So
okay.
Maybe I'm an embedded journalist.
Serena?
I'm going for a Netflix thing as well. Voicemails for Isabel. A lot of people are going to go, this has been out for 2 weeks. It has been out for 2 weeks, but it's been topping the charts for the past 2 weeks. So I thought I'd go in and see what it was all about. Basically, Zoe Deutsch plays a sister who has lost her younger sister to cystic fibrosis. She's an aspiring pastry chef. Anytime something happens in her life, she keeps calling Isabel's number. And what has happened is her number has now been assigned to somebody else, someone who's also living in Texas. And lo and behold, it's a gorgeous young man. And it's his work phone. So he keeps listening to these voicemails, and then he all of a sudden just mysteriously appears in her life and Not freaky at all, right? And knows all these things about her, and it's about whether or not they will or will not get together.
Wonder how it ends.
What do you reckon happens?
Go on. The aliens
come. Is this nicer? Exactly. Is it creepy or what is this?
It's not creepy. It's corny. I think I'm just in the mood. Like if this was me maybe 2 years ago, I would have gone, oh, rolled my eyes. This is terrible. But me now wants just really nice things. And
it's fair.
Yeah. And I felt
Is there a touch of P.S. I love you about it?
No, it's not as creepy as that. And it's not as bad as
that.
It's
not as creepy as that.
It's not as bad
as... On a stalker level, it's lower than that.
Yeah. And look, it makes sense. When you watch it, it makes sense. I think it's really sweet. The director-writer of this, Lee McKendrick, is also in this. And she based it on the relationship between herself and her sister. Her sister hasn't passed away. But it's just...
That's even weirder. Yeah.
But do you know what? I know. I'm not really selling this. It's really lovely.
No, weirdly... I saw a thing on the internet recently, and it was a story, a news story about this girl whose father died. And I used to actually ring my dad's number after he died to hear his voice. And so I think this is not that unusual a thing to do. And this girl sent texts to her dad every day after he died for about 3 years. But his number was reassigned too. But what happened was the guy that she was sending the texts she didn't know was an older man whose daughter had died. And he realized what happened. Oh. And after about 3 years, he contacted her and said, I've been reading your texts and you may have kind of saved my life. And then they became nothing romantic or anything, but they formed a kind of a friendship thing. And it was just a report, and it happened in real life. So I'm kind of weirdly invested in this already.
Dude, it is really lovely. You'll cry, like I cried 10 minutes in and then I cried at the end, but it's a lovely cry. Robin's Dancing on My Own is their song that they have together. There's a couple of Taylor Swift songs in this as well. It's just, if you're looking for a rom-com, that has all the same tropes, but feels quite fresh, watch this. There's a reason why it's at number one. I'll probably watch it again.
All right.
Okay. John Fardy.
Yes.
I'm kind of curious about this one. Larry David meets Barack Obama.
Yeah, this is weird. So it's called Life, Larry, The Pursuit of Unhappiness. By all accounts, Obama came, as you may know, America's going to be 250 years old on Saturday. And so say all of us. And Obama apparently came to him and said, let's do something. You know, and Obama calls, I don't think anybody says no to him, apart from Donald Trump, maybe. So he gets a lot of people involved. So basically, this is Larry David doing the history of the United States like he's Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm. So, for instance, he's in the trenches in World War One after the Americans have entered the war in 1917. And someone comes up to him and says, this is a picture of my darling wife. If I don't meet her, will you get this message to her? And he's kind of like, she's not that pretty. So, and there's all stuff like this. There's a funny moment where he's on the bus with Rosa Parks, and she decides to sit down the back because she's so bored talking to a Larry David-like character. So that's what's going on. The thing is...
I'm not sure about this. I'm not sure about the premise.
It doesn't really work. Oh. I mean, it's great to see Larry David back, but it's too episodic and it's too hackneyed. It's like, let's put Larry David on a bus with Rosa Parks. Like, he's doing an Alexander Graham Bell thing and the phone is ringing.
So they're picking out moments in American history
so it's an interesting
and inserting
idea.
Him like a Zelig character.
You know what that's exactly like what to me, it's like? It would be a really good sketch on Saturday Night Live if it was like 5 minutes long.
Exactly. Instead, this is seven parts on HBO Max. So, and my wife watched it with me, and her favorite comedy of all time is Curb Your Enthusiasm. And after a while, she was going, why did they do this? So just to give you the other view from the Fardy couch. So I think this is a misstep, unfortunately. And I worship at the altar of Larry David. But I just think this was like an idea on a page, and that's all it was. And they didn't think it out. So unfortunately, it's thumbs down.
Okay, crap. You both have a very brief last hit.
Mindy Kaling's Not Suitable for Work, set in New York City. Five friends instead of six. They're starting their careers. It's not Friends, but you know what? It's please give it time. Like, you don't fall in love with these characters straight away, but after eight episodes, you might enjoy it. It's on Disney Plus now.
And then the Harlan Coben one, I don't think you mentioned it last week. I Will Find You, right? So I'm of the view most of these, what a waste of time. It's a cul-de-sac, all these red herrings. I've watched 10 episodes of this. The juice is never worth the squeeze. I thought this one was slightly better than the last three I've seen. Sam Worthington plays a guy in jail convicted of murdering a son. His son may or may not be alive and he tries to leave jail. There was elements of The Fugitive in this. So it's a weird review. It's not bad. I kind of wasn't as annoyed at the end of it as I usually am by those Harlan Coben
I doubt they're
ones.
Going to use not bad. John no, Farley, I, screen
not
time.
As annoying, yeah. Not as annoying as usual.
Exactly. Those are my wedding okay. vows, I think.
Guys, you got to leave it there. John Farley and Serena Bellissimo, thank you so much for those recommendations.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.